Thank you for coming. Before, well, the plans are that I will say a few words about why I'm here, then I will talk about my experience, and then after 25, 30 minutes, I'm open to questions and I would love to answer you. But the reason I'm here is not to talk about the selective refusal. The reason is that we found out in the peace block in Israel that we don't have enough relations with progressive people all over the world, especially in USA, and with the Jewish community. Because we found out that too many people in the Jewish community and too many progressive people, they are not making difference between Israelis and Israel. They are not seeing the difference between the government and the people, and we in the peace bloc in the Israeli society feel that we need your support, that we need your help, and we are not getting it because every time people say Israel, if you are a member, most of the members of the Jewish community just stand still and say everything is okay, and from the progressive people in the progressive communities, every time Israelis speak, they think Israel, well, it's war crimes. So I came here today and in this tour just to tell you Israel now has two kind of blocks. There is the occupation block and there is the peace block. And to ask you to support us in the peace block. When I thought about, well, what to tell you, I know that we're going to have a lot of disagreements because we see things differently with different people. But I want to tell you my story and the way I made failures. I failed, I took part in occupation, and what was my moral decisions, and after it, if you have any question, I would love to answer. 26 years ago, and I will read it because I don't feel much security with my English. 26 years ago, at the age of 18, I was drafted into the Israel Defense Forces for 4.5 years of regular army and 22 years of reserve army duties. I'm still major in the Israeli Reserve Forces and I'm doing reserve duty a month a year. At that time, 26 years ago, the occupation was 9 years old. The occupied Palestinian territories were proclaimed bargaining chip to be returned perhaps for peace, and Israel was recovering from the sufferings of the 73 Day of Atonement War. I was young, naive, and patriot. So I volunteered to serve in a paratrooper unit and felt that I was doing the right thing. Being in a light unit, we did not take part in the principal routine operation required to maintain the occupation regime over the Palestinians. In those 26 years of service, I found myself twice in a situation in which, on moral grounds, I should not have been or should have acted differently. After 3.5 years of service, I was assigned to Gaza. Gaza is in the occupied territories. For 2 days. This was the only time that I took part in repression, and even now I find it hard to talk about it. I was a young lieutenant commanding a reconnaissance platoon. I was training my platoon in the Sinai Desert when I received an urgent order to go as fast as possible to Gaza. When I reported there, I was told that a Palestinian had thrown a grenade into an army truck, killing some soldiers and wounding others. Intelligence had discovered the identity of the man who threw the grenade and his address in one of Gaza's refugee camps. I was given maps and ordered to seize him. A few hours later, In the middle of the night, I was creeping through mud and sewage, between ruins and hovels, in which it was hard to believe that people were actually living. I found the house, crossed the fence surrounding it, and opened its gates. My platoon entered silently, and when I had posted two soldiers at every door and window, I ordered one of the teams to enter and arrest the grenade thrower. I had been informed by intelligence that he still had five grenades and we had to catch him quickly before he could use them. We broke through the door, ran into the house as fast as we could, and caught him sleeping in his bed. The man was shaken and didn't say anything. His children were crying. His wife was weeping, and his neighbors did not interfere. We took him outside and started to search for the missing grenades. Meanwhile, other soldiers and officers entered the house and we handed the captive over to them. I was standing in the yard of the house watching the soldiers search for the grenades in every bag, corner and hole when I saw a lieutenant colonel approaching the captive. He stood a meter from him, cocking his gun and shouting at him in Arabic, "Run, escape." Now it was me who was in shock. I stood still, staring in astonishment and not knowing what to do. The Palestinian froze. The officer was shouting and hitting him, but he did not move. He knew, as I did, that if he would try to escape, the officer could kill him. I started to move towards them, shocked and without any clear notion what to do, how to stop it, when I saw the Palestinian slowly lying down. He lay on the floor, knowing that as long as he stayed down there, no one could shoot him on the pretext that he was trying to escape. The lieutenant colonel was still shouting and kicking him, but the Palestinian was safe. A few minutes later, he was taken away by the military police. I assembled my soldier and left the house. We traveled to a military camp where we were to sleep. We talked about the horrible, humiliating incident, and I could not explain it, neither to myself nor to them. I did not understand then, as I do today, the brutal mechanism of oppression, the human corruption of occupation, the loss of compassion towards others, and the violation and the total negation of the human rights of the occupied population. We crawled into our sleeping bags, but I could not sleep. I was full of shame and could not understand why I hadn't intervened, why I stood still without doing anything. After a few hours without sleep, the operation officer came running and instructed me to take my platoon back to the refugee camp. The prisoner had been interrogated and turned out that he was not the right man. The grenade thrower was his cousin. They had the same name, both named after their grandfather. This time, we followed the same procedure, we caught the right person, we found the missing grenades, and we did not let anybody near the captive until the military police came. Next morning, we left Gaza to return to the desert training camp. That event haunted me for a long time. It still does today. For many days and nights, I thought about the man that almost died for the sin of having the wrong name. I questioned my own action, my shock, my failure to interfere, and my decency. A responsible, decent person should have intervened to prevent such a humiliation and possible murder. From that night on, I was determined to be more morally alert and to find ways to avoid being sent again to take part in occupation duties. In this, I was successful, and I completed my regular service a year later without taking part directly in the repression of the Palestinians. But this was not enough. To keep your hands clean, it's really not enough. When I was released from the army and went to the university, I met other discharged soldiers disturbed over having taken part in the occupation, and we started to consider alternatives. We began to talk about selective refusal, that is, to serve in the defense forces that were still needed, but to refuse to take part in occupation duties. We were still at the stage of preparation, rewriting different versions of anti-occupation petition and newspaper ads when the Lebanon War began. This was the moment when the idea of establishing Yesh Gvul was conceived. Yesh Gvul, There is a Limit, is an organization that encourages and helps Israeli soldiers to refuse to participate in the military oppression in the Lebanese and the Palestinian territories. The Syrian too, of course. When the war started in 1982, I had begun to realize the corrupt nature of the occupation and its immorality. But I was still naive enough to think that the corruption was individual, not societal, that there were wrongdoers, but as a society, we are still accountable and morally concerned, and I was wrong. On being called, I went to the war. 3 months later, on a high mountain on the Lebanese-Syrian border, looking at the lights of Damascus Airport, without having learned anything new about the reasons for the war, but after hearing my prime minister declare that it was war of choice, meaning that it was not a necessary war of defense, and hearing his promise that we would bring new order to Lebanon, I started to grasp the corruption that had penetrated Israeli society and its political and moral infrastructure. I now informed my commanders that I refused to take part, any part, in this unjust war. I told them that I was not willing to do any reserve duty on Lebanese soil. And next time I was called to reserve duty, I requested to serve only inside the Israeli border. I refused duty in Lebanon or in any other occupied zone, and my refusal got me sentenced to 35 days in military prison number 6. I was in prison, but the alternative would have been morally unacceptable to me. Since then, I have been threatened time and again with imprisonment over my refusal, but never again did I enter the occupied territories as a soldier. I have gone there only as a demonstrator against occupation and human rights violations. During the Lebanon War, more than 3,000 Israeli soldiers joined Yesh Gvul, and more than 150 of them were imprisoned for refusing to fulfill reserve duties in Lebanon. Today, the occupation has lasted almost 36 years. The occupied Palestinian territories are considered among many Israelis as part of our homeland, and Israeli society at large does not allow the Palestinians the same human rights that we enjoy. Every day, routinely, we witness evils that take place in our name in the occupied territories. We witness deprivation of food and healthcare, mass destruction of crops, products and infrastructures, demolition of houses and neighborhoods, bombing of civilian neighborhoods, and worst of all, shooting at civilians and killing hundreds of innocent people. All this leaving the Palestinian population with no hope nor remedy. All our evils that decent people treat as immoral by definition and international treaties defined as war crimes, acts that every soldier must refuse to take part in. All governments, I think that the American governments too, all governments educate youngsters in school and in the army to obey. Many soldiers obey and every command, fulfill every order, and participate in war crimes. too many soldiers have forgotten that obedience should not replace responsibility, that there are so-called legal acts that are immoral, and that, whether for practical or ideological reasons, their commanders and governments often conceal immoral action with so-called legal disguise. Nowadays, there are far too many immoral acts committed in the occupied territories that have to be disguised to cover their true nature. They are labeled as defensive operations, anti-terror activity, force majeure, and so on. But even though the soldiers that take part in those acts are legally covered, at least inside Israel, their share in war crimes will haunt them for the rest of their lives. As an Israeli, I find it hard to admit, but since October 2000, so many of us walked into the dark realm of war crimes. Only a few, those who actively resist occupation and oppression, remember that there are legal acts that decent people do not commit. During the two intifadas, only a few thousands of Israeli soldiers and youngsters declared their refusal, and over 400 of them, I think almost 450 of them, were imprisoned for refusing to take part in repression and occupation duties. Citizenship in democracy implies commitment to democratic values, responsibility for your own deeds, and for your society's actions. It is hard to accept that your society acts immorally at times. It is harder when your society is systematically immoral over many years, and 36 years of occupation is a long period of time. The occupation has become one of the main infrastructure of the Israeli political entity. It becomes ever more difficult to rule over more than 3.5 million Palestinians striving for their own self-determination and freedom. And we Israelis use ever more force to maintain the occupation. Too many Israelis have forgotten that keeping the Palestinians under occupation is by definition an anti-democratic act, an act in which responsible democratic citizens should not participate. We of the Israeli refusal community take our commitment to democratic and human values seriously. We oppose our government's policies and actions in the occupied Palestinian territories. We try to show our fellow citizens that occupation is not just a political or strategic matter. We try to show that there are people living there, people who suffer because Israel is ruled by policies that are blind to the right of the others to live in freedom and equality. Occupation for us is a moral matter, an issue that we cannot morally accept. It is not easy to advocate selective refusal at times of terror attacks, bus explosion, suicide bombers, and all the fears and feelings that accompany them. But as a member of the refusal community, we refuse to participate in the repression of the Palestinians. We do our best to convince our fellow citizens that they don't have to take part in the occupation, that they have to say no the way that we are saying no. We try to convince them they can stand up against the majority in our society, that they have to commit themselves not to their commanders or our government, not to the tyranny of the majority, but to the democratic basics of freedom of equality, values that are universal and therefore apply to all. We tend to forget that, as it was written in Genesis 1:27, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Well, this is my speech, and I would like to answer questions.